Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you and good morning. As I prepare this radio script today, I have before me five newspaper articles, three from the Jackson Sun and two from the Commercial Appeal. These five newspaper articles deal with the topic I am discussing with you today, guns and alcohol. One of the articles in the Commercial Appeal has the title, School Gunfire Fells Children. This article tells of a young woman with a gun who entered an elementary school in Winnetka, Illinois, and started shooting at the children. Several children were seriously hurt, and two people died from gunshot wounds. The woman ran from the school building to a house nearby, where she secluded herself from the police. Perhaps no one will ever know the motivation for the shooting. The woman apparently took her own life. All of us who have any feeling for the welfare of our fellow men are appalled at such tragedies. Some of us are so angered that we want to have laws passed which would prevent the selling or buying of guns, particularly handguns. It is possible and even likely that some legislators will begin to agitate for more gun control. Is that a reasonable approach to solving the great number of crimes that involve handguns? My purpose today is not to answer that question, but to show how blind we often are to a far greater evil, beverage alcohol. Like many of you in my audience today, I grew up in a home where guns were a vital part of our life. My father owned shotguns, rifles, both rimfire and centerfire, and handguns. Some of my customers in our sporting goods store in North Georgia would have described my father as a gun nut, and he would have agreed with that characterization of him. He was such a gun nut that he thought it was almost a crime for a true sportsman not to load his own ammunition. For almost 50 years before his death in 1982, he had loaded his ammunition for his center fire, both rifles and handguns. When I was a small boy, my father practically made a living for his family with a gun. He hunted raccoons, opossums, mink, muskrat, and other wild animals. He could make more money to support his family by his hunting activities than he could by hewing cross ties for 10 cents apiece during the day. But after the hard times were behind him, he still enjoyed hunting, making his own ammunition, trading guns, target shooting, and such like. He also enjoyed making and shooting muzzleloaders. He and I hunted together on the primitive weapons hunts in Georgia. In short, our family was a hunting, shooting, gun-making, gun-trading family. My father taught his children to respect guns, to handle them carefully, and never to use them for the wrong purposes. Not one of the 12 Claiborne children has ever had an accident with a gun or hurt anyone with a gun. Dad knew that guns could be used incorrectly and carelessly. He waged a war most of his life against such use and abuse of guns. He was a lifetime member of the National Rifle Association. He fought vigorously to prevent the liberal politicians from taking away the American people's guns from them. He knew guns could be dangerous, but he also knew that guns were not the problem. People who misuse guns were and are the problem. I never knew my dad to have a bumper sticker on his car or truck, but I know he agreed with the slogan that one often sees on bumper stickers: guns don't kill people. People kill people. All Americans must be concerned about the misuse of guns. But why do some politicians and other liberal elements in our society agitate for the removal of guns from the American people and fight like cats and dogs to prevent anyone's outlawing the sale of beverage alcohol? Do they not know, or does it really matter, that many times more people are killed by alcohol than by guns? Does it make any difference how people are killed? If a man dies from being shot with a high-powered rifle or with a shotgun, is he any more dead than from being run over by a drunk or from being killed from cirrhosis of the liver? The four articles, which I mentioned a few minutes ago, deal with the tragic accident which took place in the lives of 27 people in Kentucky. The Commercial Appeal's lead article on Tuesday morning, May the 17th, 1988, had this title, 27 Murder Counts Filed. Driver Fails Alcohol Test. Will you please think seriously about that article? 27 people murdered, not by guns, but by a drunk. Is it possible that legislators in Kentucky and in other states will begin to agitate for taking beverage alcohol away from the American people? Are you aware of one of the main arguments of law enforcement people and school officials? We have to make school buses safer. I am all for that, but it is unlikely that the accident would have been much different if the bus had been safer. The problem was alcohol, not the bus. The Jackson Sun ran an article on smoking on May 17, 1988. The article asked the question, is smoking addictive? In the upper right-hand corner of the article was a box with the following eye-opening statistics. They are worth hearing. 2,000 people die in the United States every year because they use cocaine. 4,000 people die from using heroin-type drugs. 4,000 people die each year because they use other drugs in connection with alcohol. My friends, here are the real eye-openers. 125,000 people die from using alcohol, and 320,000 people die from using tobacco. The 125,000 Americans die because someone drinks beverage alcohol. That 125,000 include the drinkers themselves, members of their families who are killed from a drunken father or husband, people killed on the highway, in industrial and home accidents. And the truth is, as anyone who has thought about it will concede, many of the people killed with guns are killed by people who are drunk. This scenario is repeated hundreds of times every year in our nation. A man begins to drink, gets angry with his wife or child or neighbor, and kills someone, not because of the gun, but because alcohol causes him to act in foolish and dangerous ways. But if the gun were not readily available, would that not make a difference? Obviously, it would make a difference in some cases. But what about the children at Carrollton, Kentucky? That drunken driver did not have a gun. He did not need one. He had something just as deadly, a truck. Are we going to outlaw trucks because that driver in Kentucky misused his? My heart goes out to those Kentucky families who lost so much in that tragic accident. The Jackson Sun printed an article with the title, Bus Crash Takes Wife, Daughters. And this article appeared on Tuesday, May the 17th, 1988. Let me read some excerpts from that brief article. Sergeant Lee Williams, known to his friends as a soldier, a Sunday school teacher, and most of all a family man, lost everything dear to him in the bus crash at Carrollton on Saturday. He lost his wife, Joy, 34, the childhood sweetheart he married almost two decades ago when they were still high schoolers in Poplar Bluff, Missouri. He lost his daughter, Kristen, 14, the sensitive girl who switched last week from clarinet to bass clarinet in the Radcliffe Middle School band. He lost his daughter, Robin, 10, the sports-minded one, who played in her first softball game last week. In the church bus that crashed and burned on Interstate 71, Sergeant Lee Williams lost his entire family. He has no one else, Jean Grimes, his sister-in-law and Joy's identical twin, said Monday. joy and the kids were all he had. Williams, a 38-year-old veteran of the Vietnam War, had learned to live with the possibility that death, his own, in Southeast Asia, might separate him from his family. But he had long since outlived those fears when his wife and children went to Kings Island on the church outing. As a professional soldier, he was trained to die, the chaplain said on Monday, but not to have his family die. He's in the initial stages of shock. He's walking around for 20 minutes looking for his glasses when they're on his face. Page 4A. As I think about these tragic events, one question keeps coming up. Who is responsible for the loss of these 27 precious lives and for the loss of the thousands and thousands of others who perish from alcohol-related deaths every year? No, my friends, I am not about to try to relieve the 34-year-old man in Kentucky from moral responsibility in the deaths of those 27 people. Any man or woman who takes a drink of beverage alcohol, or several drinks, and then goes out and kills someone is guilty of murder. The man is under indictment for murder, and he should be. But is there anyone in my audience today who thinks he may be convicted of murder? Chances are his attorney will plead him innocent by reason of insanity, or he will plea bargain in his behalf. Do you think I might be overly excited about the matter? Are you aware that the man who was an engineer on a train which killed 16 people plea bargained his sentence until he received only 1 5-year sentence? He was using marijuana at the time of the accident and probably will not serve more than 2 years of his 5-year sentence. The same will likely happen in Kentucky. But is the driver of that pickup truck the only one who is guilty? The answer is unequivocally no. The state legislators in Kentucky and the governor are guilty, although it is unlikely that their guilt will be established or even discussed during the trial of the truck driver. Any politician who votes for the legalization of beverage alcohol must bear some of the responsibility in a case such as the one we're examining. One of the arguments that the supporters of beverage alcohol offer is that the sale of whiskey, wine, and such like will enrich the coffers of the jurisdictions which legalize them, discounting the fact that the argument is absolutely false. Please think about the loss of 27 people in Kentucky. If these were your sons and daughters or your wife, how effective would the financial argument for legalizing beverage alcohol be with you? If you have 2 sons, as I do, and I have a beautiful grandson and a beautiful granddaughter, how much revenue would it take from the sale of beverage alcohol to compensate for the loss of your family members? You may think I am overly emotional about the sale of liquor, and you're right. When drinking has affected so many who are so close to people, how could anyone keep from being emotional? But one's emotions do not prevent his seeing the real evils associated with drinking beverage alcohol. All one needs to do is read the newspapers and watch television. These sources present enough evidence to show just how destructive beverage alcohol really is. One does not have to be emotional about it to oppose it. He just needs to be realistic. But the politicians and the voters are not the only ones who are guilty when people lose their lives because of someone's drinking. Churches and individuals who fail to speak out against alcohol are just as guilty as the politicians who work to legalize the sale of alcohol. Can you imagine a preacher's reading the Bible on a regular basis, or reading it at all, and not using his pulpit to speak out against this great evil? Can a man be a true preacher of the gospel and fail to condemn an evil so great as beverage alcohol? Does it matter to such a preacher that lives are being lost homes are being broken, and souls are being lost. If you disagree with what I'm saying this morning, please have the courage to let me know your thoughts on this vital topic. In addition to silent preachers, ambitious politicians, and uninformed or unconcerned voters, the manufacturers, the distributors, and the retail salesmen are also guilty. Many in this latter group appear to be interested only in what they can receive from the sales of strong drink, not in what it does to individuals, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of individuals. So many Americans die on our highways every year because somebody drinks. 50% of divorces in the United States are directly related to beverage alcohol, as is 50% of all crime. And yet some prominent citizens, and even some who call themselves Christians, support the legal sale of this deadly and destructive evil. Another article from the Jackson Sun needs reviewing briefly. The editorial staff of the Jackson newspaper wrote an article on the danger in not being tough on DUI violators, Saturday, May the 21st, 1988. The editorial mentions the tragic incident in Kentucky and expressed the opinion that jails are appropriate for drunken drivers. Listen to this brief excerpt from the Jackson Sun. The accused, Larry Mahoney, was no mass murderer picking off victims at random. But he had as high-powered a weapon as any murderer ever had. His blood was filled with alcohol, and he got behind the wheel of his pickup truck on a highway. The district attorney thinks the circumstances are extenuating enough to press for the death penalty. Page 6A. I am 100% in agreement that drunken drivers should be imprisoned and should be fined. However, it does not and cannot stop the senseless slaughter on our highways and in the workplace. So long as beverage alcohol is readily available, we are going to experience what occurred in Carrollton, Kentucky a few days ago. There simply is no way to avoid it. Besides, the Jackson Sun was very enthusiastic in its support for the legalization of liquor by the drink. The editorial staff saw liquor by the drink as being a great boon to Jackson and to Madison County. Will it take a tragedy like the one in Kentucky to make us see just how ungodly and destructive alcoholic beverages really are? I hope and pray that such never happens in our area. But when it does, if it does, the ones who support liquor sales cannot plead innocence. While I was preparing this lesson, I received a church bulletin from the University Church in Murray, Kentucky, the congregation, incidentally, where one of my sons is a deacon. The following facts about alcohol were included in that bulletin. These facts were taken from the Kentucky issue. Alcohol is America's number one drug problem among youth. In 1985, an estimated 4.6 million adolescents, ages 14 through 17, experienced negative consequences of alcohol, arrest, involvement in an accident, impairment of health, or job performance. Alcohol is twice as popular among college students as the next leading drug, marijuana. Only 42% of fourth graders know that alcohol is a drug, compared with 81% who consider marijuana as a drug. The earlier in life a child starts using any dependence-producing drug, the more likely he or she is to experience health problems and to go on to use other drugs. About 10,000 young people ages 16 to 24 are killed each year in alcohol-related accidents. Nearly 100,000 10- and 11-year-olds reported getting drunk at least once a week in 1985. Children of alcoholics have a 4 times greater risk of developing alcoholism than children of non-alcoholics. Many surveys suggest that the best predictor of the drinking habits of adolescents is the attitude and the behavior of their parents regarding the use of alcohol. A child would see alcohol consumed an average of 75,000 times on television before he or she is of legal drinking age. Drinking differences between boys and girls are diminishing. It is estimated that increasing federal excise taxes on beer would reduce alcohol-related motor vehicle fatalities by 55% among 18 to 20-year-old men and by 45% among 18 to 20-year-old women. Alcoholism is a chronic, progressive, and potentially fatal disease. It is sure to lead to psychological and physical dependence, as well as doing damage to the body, often irreversible. One of the scriptures which the University Church Bulletin recommended on the subject of alcohol was 1 Corinthians 6. Although Paul does not specifically mention alcohol, we can apply these verses to alcohol and to other destructive drugs. What? Know you not that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit which is in you, which you have of God, and you are not your own? For you are bought with a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. 1 Corinthians 6, 19-20. But even if alcohol were not damaging to the drinker's physical and spiritual well-being, he would still be unwise because of the possibility of killing others in highway accidents and in other situations. After all, the scriptures tell us to be concerned about the welfare of others. Bear you one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Galatians 6, 2. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Philippians 2, 4. Give none offense, neither to the Jews, nor to the Gentiles, nor to the church of God. Even as I please all men in all things, not seeking mine own profit, but the profit of many, that they may be saved. 1 Corinthians 10, 32 and 33. We are living in such a sophisticated age. We travel at high rates of speed on the highways. The workplace has so many dangers for the workers, many of these completely unavoidable. How can anyone drink when he knows that he may be called on to make a split-second decision which can determine life and death, not only his, but those of his fellow men? Does it seem to you that a man is acting responsibly when he puts into his mouth that which will take away his brain, as Shakespeare put it? How can we refer to such behavior as anything but murder when a man or woman intentionally takes a drink and then kill someone in an automobile accident? I want to close our lesson today by reading a statement from Billy Carter. Dennis Holy edited an excellent book, The Courage to Change, which includes articles by dry alcoholics. There are chapters by Sid and Florence Caesar, Gary Crosby, Ryan Duren, Shecky Green, Wilbur Mills, Don Newcomb, Jason and Lois Robards, Doc Severinsen, Rod Steiger, Grace Slick, and others. The chapter by Sybil and Billy Carter is entitled, Wives and Alcoholic Husbands. Billy recounts his early drinking and then says, "Eventually, when I got up in the morning, I had two drinks and vomited blood for 30 minutes. I needed a drink to function for the day. I knew something was not quite normal. I could not hold any food at all on my stomach. There were still a lot of people who didn't think I drank anything but beer. I was drinking, I think, close to a half gallon of booze a day, then beer." Page 167. When Billy finally checked into an alcohol treatment center in Long Beach, California, he had quit eating. These are his own words. "I'd gone on a complete alcohol diet, nothing else. It was full time. I don't think I had eaten any solid food in over 50 days. I couldn't hold it on my stomach." After Billy Carter submitted to the treatment in California, he quit drinking. He was not cured, but he had quit drinking. These words from Billy are very revealing. I can truthfully say, I have no desire for a drink. And I think if I were to drink today, I would immediately drink myself to death. I regret that my drinking hurts Sybil and my kids. If I hurt some of my friends too, I regret that. I've become real close to my four kids since I quit drinking. I hardly knew them when they were coming up. I regret that more than anything else. I regret the way it hurts Sybil. But I think Sybil and I are stronger since we came through all of this. We have been married 29 years and still love each other. I think we are happy as anybody now. I enjoy life more. I enjoy every day. I think I'm happier now than I have ever been. It's different. I enjoy the job I've got. I look forward to every day, but I don't think I have changed that much. I'm a little quieter. I'm not the life of the party anymore. I live a normal life. I enjoy not drinking. As I said, it's all right for me not to drink. Pages 168 and 169. As most of you know, Billy Carter has died since having written this article. I do not know how much drinking contributed to his death. My friends, I am pleading with you to be informed on the question of beverage alcohol. I urge you to use your influence to reduce the sale of alcohol and to speak out against its sale and its use. Christians cannot afford to be silent on an evil so great, an evil which kills so many Americans and which destroys so many homes and businesses. It is possible that you have questions or comments on our lesson today. If you do, please feel free to write to me and let me know your thoughts. Thank you for listening, and may our Heavenly Father richly bless you.